Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Why are we having Thanksgiving dinner on top of the Titantron? Oh, no reason. Be right back.
Yes! Come on to the rock show. Come on to the people show. Come on to the premiere show. SmackDown!
It is the 1st of June, the year of our Lord 2000. Billy Piper's Day and Night, a song I had forgotten all about until Googling for this, is number one in the UK charts. That's all of the day. All of the night, yeah.
You do the things that make me
feel so light. Speaking of tunes, Gladiator is still number one of the 4th week in a row. Thank you, Kurt Angle. Check us in the post. Bomberman 64, The Second Attack is the release of the week. Anyone care about 64-bit Bomberman? Nope, fair enough.
Oh, Bomberman. Well, it was still better than Bomberman Zero. Remember that? When Xbox said, we're going to make Bomberman edgy. And it turned out they made... Well, edgy, they meant crap. And here we are.
Yeah, it was the naked Midian of Bomberman. Of Bomberman. Johnny Vaughan confirms he will step down as co-presenter of The Big Breakfast in early 2001. Thought you'd react to that. And finally, Tony Blair receives a hostile reception during a speech at the Women's Institute, where he is heckled and slow hand clapped by furious members like Roman Reigns, the Raw after pinning Undertaker at WrestleMania.
What, he told me that Tony Blair walked into the Women's Institute and went, this is my yard now.
Yeah, and they very politely and Britishly clapped him off. But mind the outside world. What was happening in the inside world in the year of our Lord 2000 with that crazy little wrestling company known as the WWF? And is that Undertaker guy still around? Well, the answers to most of those questions can be found on this very podcast you're listening to right now on your handset, your phone, your car, your didgeridoo, your novelty fish that sings when you press a little button on the wall. However it is you are listening to the Cultaholic Classic SmackDown review, you still get the wonderful dulcet tones of Matthew, the guy you're listening to now, and of course, the man who completes me, Mr. Tom Campbell. How the hell are you?
You complete me. I am good, thank you, my friend. A special Thursday flavoured SmackDown review. This is going up on Thursday as opposed to Tuesday. Back to normal from next week, so fret not, mi amigo. It's all fine. A few people did go, Steph, the podcast isn't working because it's Tuesday and it's not here. So I had to reassure them everything was fine. It's a joyous week this week at Cultaholic because to break away from us talking about wrestling from the year of our Lord 2000, it is the week that Ross returns to us. And Ross has been back on WTF Moments for a few days now. And I am sure, as you, Matthew, are delighted to have our boy Ross back.
Ooh, his... No, look, I can't even joke. I mean, it's... We've all missed him. It's tremendous to see him back. And it's great that, you know, absence has only made the heart grow fonder. You know, Twitter's been full of it. The YouTube comments have been full of it. The Twitch streams have been full of it. Where's Ross? Where is the Ross? When is the Ross coming back? And now he's back and everyone can rejoice.
Absence makes the heart grow fonder. Or if you're Ted Turner, absinthe makes the heart Jane Fonda.
Wow.
Thanks very much.
Literally Ted Turner? Does he own a wrestling company?
Oh, he might do. That might be the connection. So in a So if this is your first time with us, hi, we're Tom and Maff, and this is where we watch every single episode of SmackDown from its very beginning to either our or the show's bitter end. We are just over a week and a bit removed from Judgment Day 2000. We are on the road to King of the Ring 2000. So we're going to check in very shortly, and Maff is going to guide us through this week's episode of what was then Thursday Night SmackDown. But before we do, we like to take a look at the wrestling landscape in this particular week with some help from the Wrestling Observer. The Brian Pillman Memorial Show has taken place since we were last together. More than 2,000, according to Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer, largely appreciative fans, which is a passag statement if I ever heard it. He said it was a very strange atmosphere at times. There were independent and developmental talent trying to show off, and there were veterans from big companies who were giving up their days off midweek with a road schedule arduous enough to begin with to be part of the show. The show raised $36,000 plus for the family of the late, great Brian Pillman. And it may even be higher than that because Kevin Nash, David Arquette, and DDP were going to make donations as well. There was a couple of standout moments from that, namely the donations that I mentioned just there. Kevin Nash offered $20,000 to the Pillman family if Missy Hyatt stripped down to her bra and pants in front of a largely family audience because wrestling in 2000. Diamond Dallas Page also tried to raise money by having a bidding war, bidding for taking a dress from local valet Helena Heavenly. So I'm glad that DDP and Nash turned up to be colossal perverts in the name of charity. A big noteworthy thing from this show, away from the bids and stuff and the money raised, is the resurgence of a name from wrestling in the 90s. Do you know who had a bit of a return to form here, Matthew?
I certainly do. It's Wee Willie himself, Mr. Regal.
William Regal took on Chris Benoit at the top of this show, and it was a match. William Regal, by this point, had been through some tough times in his personal life. He'd been dealing with substance abuse and addiction, and he wasn't in a great way, and he disappeared from the scene. This was a coming back. This was the return of William Regal here. He and Chris Benoit put on a wrestling clinic that put the WWF eyes back on to Mr. Regal. We'll see where this goes. But that was from the Brian Pillman show. Always an interesting setup for that one. Tammy Sitch in WCW has been taken off Monday Night Show following an incident backstage before a show. Sitch always had some problems in WCW, didn't she, Murph?
She sadly did. Definitely substance abuse issues, if I remember correctly. And it's a shame because her and Candido cruelly shoved into the cruiserweight division of WCW at this point. However, he was very entertaining during this period because he was basically just a diddler. A very entertaining one at that compared to the likes of the artist formerly known as Prince Iaukea and Evan Courageous.
It was before this particular episode of Nitro that two of the other women working on the show found syringes in a restroom adjacent to the women's locker room, along with a vial of Nubane, a pain-killing drug that in recent years has become popular with wrestlers. There was a bit of an issue with addiction to this in ECW dressing rooms several months back, and all the fingers pointed to Tammy Sitch. She was supposed to be doing a catfight spot with Miss Hancock on the show to set up for a tag match between Chris and Tammy and David and Miss Hancock. But after the syringes were found and Tammy Sitch was discovered to be the person who put them there, she was pulled from the show and ordered to take a drug test the next day. It's not a nice scene right now for Tammy Sitch in WCW. It's just one of many problems she'll have.
No, you're completely right. The only positive thing I could say about this is she's still alive to this day.
Certainly is. Ask JR, she's on OnlyFans and everything. Sabu and the Dirt Bike Kid, along with Dan Severn and Michael Kovac, are headlining an FWA show in Halifax, West Yorkshire soon. This rings a bell with you, Mav?
Yeah, this was heavily hyped in the old World of Wrestling magazine back in the day. These lovely pictorials and photos and just the spread detailing all the cool stuff and made it sound like, I think the thing that the article started with was British wrestling is back, which I think every company that popped up the next 5 or 6 or maybe even 10 years had that same, like, guess what, guys, it's back. And all these people have been running these like crappy little events in you know, leisure centres throughout the 90s and early 2000s are going, oh, the rise it left me. yes, this was, what was it, FWA No Limits, No Remorse, No Refunds. I forget what it was called, but it was something like that. Yeah, I've got the VHS release of that. It's a humdinger.
I've got it's actually the details about it on cagematch.net. There are details all about it. The show in question from Halifax in 2006. As we say, pro wrestling is back. It is FWA. And let's see if we find it here. The show is called, where are we? FWA Evil Intentions About to Explode.
Oh, God.
Oh. I mean, both Sabu and the Dirt Bike Kid made it to the show. which would see the XPW heavyweight title and the EWA European Junior Heavyweight title both on the line in the main event. Other matches from that show, let's have a look at who else made the cut. Paul Travell and Mark Sloan in a contract on a pole top contenders match. So not only do you get a contract, you become the top contender. Justin Richards putting the British heavyweight title on the line. That's a name I haven't heard in ages. Ages. The Flatliner was on the show. Bit of an old school wrestling legend. If you did the circuit in the late 90s, early noughties, the Flatliner was part of a special £1,000 challenge match. Also, the Dominator was on the show. Everyone's favourite wrestling podcaster. Actually, is Stiff Right Hand still a thing? The podcast he does? I haven't heard it in a while.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Are you not familiar with Stiff Right Hand by the Dominator?
I've had a few Stiff Right Hands in my day, mate, but none of them involved him.
The Dominator was doing a podcast with his wife Scarlett. I don't know whether it's still on, but he was defending the EWW title at that. It's a weird state of affairs. Yeah, EW. Every time I see signs for EWW, I just think, ew, you've called your company ew. Weird state of affairs for British wrestling in 2000.
Yeah, I've got to interrupt, though. I have got Paul Ash, who had the three-way dance of Enigma and Curve, on my Facebook. He's a nice guy. He collects Transformers. But he's most known for, at this point, they did the FWA Ring of Honor double team in 2003, I want to say. And he's the guy who completely flubbed a Van Terminator. And this went head over tit.
Oh,
and I think that's... But on the plus side, it could be worse. People could be looking at FWA Evil Intentions About to Explode on the award-winning FWA network or whatever. God.
Yeah, tough journey for British wrestling. It's got a long way to go.
And that might be one of the last times Dirt Bike Kid wrestled as well.
Was it really? Was that at the end of his time?
I think, according to Cage Match, he didn't have any other matches afterwards. He's a fascinating bloke. He's very quiet as well. He made an appearance like in the crowd talking to people or maybe backstage at an ICW show a few years ago, but he hasn't done like the shoot interview with Dirt by a Kid or out like that. He seems to just left, and all that's left is these matches with Sabu he had when he brought them in 98 and 96 in the UK, and getting choked out and throttled by the great Sasuke.
Blimey. I did not know that. Maybe there's a podcast in talking to him. I feel like he'll have...
Dude, if you can get him, please let me know.
Oh, you'll be there with me, mate. You'll be there with me. Away from British wrestling, let's go back to this side of the pond for the other side of the pond for this final bit. Todd Pettingill, on his New York radio show, said he will be returning to the WWF to host Livewire.
What?
So a rumour about Todd Pettingill returning to the WWF started by Todd Pettingill. This obviously would not transpire, but wow, some bowels on him to publicly announce he's returning, knowing full well, you know, looking back, that he didn't actually return for another 20 years.
Yes, in a heavily ironic way. Like, the idea of Todd Pettingill returning here...
It's a weird time. I mean, we talk about him a lot on the Classic Raw review.
I bet you do.
We certainly do. And he's very hit or miss. Very hit or miss. And the fact that the WWF, in it will take them 20 years for them to go, all right, let him do his thing again. And as you say, in a very ironic way, it was quite the scenes. But yeah, so that's the wrestling news for this week. That's what's happening in the wrestling world right about now. Let's head over to Matthew to talk us through this episode of SmackDown.
Exactly. I mean, what better segue than Todd Pettengill will return to wrestling 20 years later than ironically returning to wrestling that happened 20 years earlier. The dramatic Raw recap starts and Vince says, what we have here is two individuals with two mutual enemies, which is The Rock and Undertaker. Both men want Triple H's title. So they face off on Raw in a lumberjack match that, surprise, surprise, goes the same way as all of them have done this year and ends the same as them, with DX laying both men out. But wait, here comes Kane to clean house, and I have typed clean with a K. But after laying Triple H out, Kane holds up Triple H's title, which is a nice scene because he's usually too busy with X-Pac or cooking for Linda to actually bother to go for the world title. So that's the setup for this week's episode. But first, a word from our sponsors. Widdy wee, widdy woo, widdy wee, widdy woo. Thank you very much. We're in the Tacoma Dome in the Pacific Northwest. No, me neither. But according to Wikipedia, this was the scene for Spring Stampede 99, which was arguably the last truly great WCW pay-per-view. And then later on, WWE's Stomping Ground from 2019. Can't win them all, I guess. And we start with the brand new tag team champions, Too Cool, having defeated Edge and Christian on Monday Night Raw with thanks to Joe C. Yes, Kid Rock's Joe C, that little one. And I think this is their only tag title reign, and it's very deserved because they're white hot, meaning they're hot and they're white, and they're defending against the Hardys, and the pace is quicker than Kevin Dunn's edit finger. But more importantly than the double teams both men are giving each other, Lita is shown watching the match backstage. This is, of course, after the Hardy Boys saved her from a brutal beatdown from Essie Rios, who I don't know what he would have done, to be honest with you, if they'd left her. Maybe he would have delivered moonsault after moonsault and then probably missed the third one. But anyway, fast, big bump in action ensues, with the highlight being Sexay getting ready to powerbomb Matt, backdropping Jeff, who ran towards him, and then lagerbombing Matt anyway. Crowd really enjoyed that. The worm hits on Jeff, and that is very over, but Matt counters to a twist of fate. Jeff lands a swanton bomb. 1, 2, and kaboom. That's gotta be Kane. Oh, no, so that's how we do it.
That's gotta be Kane.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Tom. Kane is here, and he still has the WWF World title.
I found this, Linda. Oh, Kane. That's gotta be Kane.
I went to Vegas and woke up after a night out. I'm the world champion.
No. In the spirit of That's Gotta Be Kane, what's going to happen is that Kane will be in a room on his own, and like somebody will run in with Triple H's WWF title, going, "Hey, I stole this." Suddenly, he'll have a heart attack. And the guy will collapse. So Kane will go over, pick up the championship as he's checking on him, and that's when Triple H walks in and goes, "Kane, you stole my belt." It's like, no, he did. I was just holding it for him. That's gotta be Kane.
Kane walking backstage going, "Hello, I have a world title. Is this anybody's?" But Triple H should be too far away. You'll just see Kane going, go, "That bastard stole me belt."
He's Geordie. Or better yet, Kane rings him, but the line's bad. So all Triple H is, "Hello, Chip. I've got your championship. Not giving it back." What?
That's just Kane talking. Alright, Kane talks, but he doesn't do the thing that I do every time I do an impression. It's just him speaking, trying to sound scary.
He's all right now because, as we all know, permanently damaged larynx, they heal over time.
Exactly, especially if you eat some of the supplements that SmackDown is sponsored by. It says, "If you want the belt, you can come and take it." That's how he speaks now. Triple H shows up and the crowd is so damn loud booing him and chanting asshole that Triple H has to wait. And I love that. Triple H tries to explain to Kane that he is the champion. And to be the champion, you have to beat him. Kane hasn't beaten him, so he's not the champion, okay? He's just very condescending. And then Kane replies with, no,
So, and Triple H buys a Japanese wrestling promotion. Say,
he's like, Tom told me this great joke. Triple H says his beautiful wife just had a great idea. Hey, why doesn't Triple H give Kane something for his title back? It could be a trade. And Kane says, a title match. Triple H says, damn it, you're clever.
What it would not have been funnier if Kane had gone, panini stickers.
Stacker two.
Pogs.
RC Maximum Pro. Fuck it. Just give me some lugs.
I would like, give me some lugs. Yeah, sure. All the cool people are wearing lugs. Here, have a pair. Thank you. Here is your belt back.
Yeah.
Done.
Okay, Kane, you asked for it. You want the big deal. I have a copy of Bomberman 64 2, the second...
No. Oh. You tried this shit with me the other week with Daikatana.
If you had the Mega Drive version of Mega Bomberman, I would have taken it. Or even the Super Nintendo version, because that has four player.
If you had the SNES version, I'd have snatched your hand off.
If you'd given me the SNES version, I would have said, oh, that's super.
What if he says, let me call the banker? No deal.
Triple H says that's a very smart thing you just said, Kane. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But smart, Triple H says Kane doesn't deserve a title match. But what the hell, he'll give a match tonight without the title on the line. And if Kane beats Triple H, he'll make him number one contender and then get a title shot at King of the Ring. Okay? Now give me back my bleeping belt. Triple H rants at him, but Kane says, enjoy it while you can. You may be that damn good, but I am that damn bad. Kaboom. I was all right with Kane.
I think he's doing himself a great disservice. Okay, he can't take a pedigree that well, but he's not bad. He's quite good.
See, I prefer either that or mute version over Kane having to do like catchphrases like that.
It seems very forced. And he seems to have a lot to say. I feel like if he just kept it really short, like if he just said that last bit, I guess fine. But it's just, I guess they're trying to find some new layers to Kane, aren't they? They try to peel a Kane like an onion, find some new layers for him.
Absolutely.
And it's fine. I mean, it's like at this point as a fan, I remember watching this episode of SmackDown thinking, I'll get in. Kane, Triple H at King of the Ring. It's different. I like it. Obviously, it's kind of not what we get, but we'll talk more about that as we go.
Yeah. I think if they were going to have Kane talk and to show how much pain he's in, he just gives, like, the smallest answers possible. So Triple H is like, what do you want, Kane? And Kane's like, belt? all right, well, how do you want belt? Belt. All right, Kane, I don't... Belt!
Belt!
Bomberman 64. Backstage, the McMahon. Oh, any thoughts on Tuchel's title win?
Oh, yeah. Great start to the show. Great fast-paced opener. I like Tuchel being tag champs. I think they are like the hottest tag team in the company at the moment, obviously on the babyface side of things. So definitely give them the belts. I don't remember this being a long run with the titles, but I was happy with them being champs for the time being. And them and the Hardys had a really good match. I remember like back in like, let me think when this would have been, sort of late 99, this match probably wouldn't have meant as much, but this felt like two top babyface teams going at it here. And I thought it was a great way to start this week.
Yeah, exactly. Backstage, the McMahons try and exit a limo, but that damn underbiker is there driving around the parking lot and scaring cars.
Undy stops and cuts a promo on Vince about how he wants a title shot, all while Vince is sticking out of a limo. Like, you know, half past, what's the expression? Half sticking past. Out like, oh no, it's a southern thing where it's like you're standing there like half past 12 or whatever.
Sticking out.
Oh, damn it. Somebody will probably tweet this to me days later. I'm going to go, what the hell are you talking about? Anyway, don't mind cockney rhyming slang. Vince says Undertaker has to beat X-Pac and Road Dogg tonight to get a title shot at King of the Ring. And then Undertaker revs off and kills the audio. Vroom, vroom, vroom. So Vince, vroom. That's how it sounded. And then this segues into backstage again. Triple H and Vince both tell each other about their great ideas. But wait, they have possibly two number one contenders? Uh-oh.
SpaghettiOs.
Yeah. And then Shane arrives with Linda. And then Shane arrives with Edge and Christian, and he's mad. I don't know why he's mad. He's just mad. So he makes it Rock versus Edge and Christian tonight. And if The Rock wins, then The Rock is number one contender. Tom, there can't be three number one contenders.
I'm going to go to three Christmas dinners at different houses. Whatever will we do? Oh, competitors.
That's got to be diddly.
That's got to be shit.
They call the diddler there, I'm sorry.
It's a bit, right, mate. It's a bit contrived, isn't it? It's fine, though. It's that whole bumbling McMahon Helmsley faction thing again, where they're like, oh, I booked this. Well, I booked this. We know where it leads to. I'll tell you what I like about this is the fact that it feels like for the first time in a while, SmackDown doesn't feel like sort of a B show. Because here, they're making the main event for King of the Ring, and they're doing it on SmackDown, which I really like. Like, they're putting this together on SmackDown. Feel like it's getting a lot of extra special love this week. Always nice to see Undertaker twatting about on his bike backstage. That's kind of his thing at the moment. And yeah, I'm all right with it. It's stuff that's happening, which is nice.
Yeah, well said. And even if it's funny seeing Vince half out of a limo going, oh yeah, well tonight you... It's a funny image.
Odd image.
Yeah. Anyway, here's Kurt Angle to smooth that SmackDown headache. Kurt knows this place is bad because Kurt has been unable to get the IC title shot. Oh, I've actually managed to pipe bad instead of sad there. That's fantastic. Matthew was fantastic. I was a born stenographer. This place is actually sad because Kurt has been unable to get the IC title shot. And even though this place is used to failing at their dreams, Kurt's a winner. So Kurt instead vows to win King of the Ring later on. So he doesn't even bother finding out who's opponents tonight. He doesn't care because it doesn't matter. He's still going to give them an Olympic lesson. It's Bradshaw. And even worse than that, it's Bradshaw without Farouk or jokes. Oh, no.
Just wrestling, Bradshaw.
Oh, great. God. Fantastic. It's like when you clean the grill for the hot dog maker and all you left was a wiener. Bradshaw brawlingly brawls with Kurt because he can't wrestle amateur style, no matter how well Finn Martin describes it. Oh, that was an alright joke there, so I thought I'd pose, and it turns out it was a crap joke. Until Kurt gets his foot on the ropes after a clothesline from hell.
It took me a second to get it, so...
It would have helped if it was typed nicer and, you know, delivered better. And then he pins Bradshaw after the Olympic slam. But Bradshaw is a bad loser, Finn Martin adds, and a worse world champion. And power bombs Kurt. Why have I got a hard-on for Finn Martin here, of all people? I wrote this a week ago. Sorry.
there's a lot of love for Finley this week. Have you been reading Power Slam again?
My name is Finley, and I love to complain about Mick Foley saying he was going to retire.
My name is Finley, and I hate wrestling. Here's my wrestling magazine. He did hate wrestling.
Towards the end, he absolutely hated it. It's all good. Get nostalgic about the glory days of Power Slam, but the last few years were like pages 1 to 40. This is crap. Pages 41. Can you subscribe?
I wasn't even that marky a mark at this point, but I was still very aware of like this man's really angry with everything. This man doesn't like a lot of things in wrestling. But this was nice. This was fine for what it was. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you embraced it, Matthew, because we aren't going to talk about Kurt Angle versus Bradshaw one-on-one for 5 years now. Because the next time they go one-on-one, they headline SmackDown in a WWE title match. And if I was to tell you this, at this moment in time in the year of our Lord 2000, you would be forgiven for assuming that Kurt Angle would go into that match as WWE champion. No! Oh, no! The world turns in some quite dramatic fashion between now and 2005.
Who would have seen that coming? Wrestling's just the weirdest thing. I mean, if it was a proper TV show, you just throw the thing over. Who wrote this? Some of the worst writing I've ever seen, and I've seen Simpsons season 23.
I have to say, though, I do love Lawler's joke about parallel bars. That was funny. When they were talking about the Olympics, and Jerry Lawler said, Bradshaw was interested in the Olympics until he realised what the parallel bars actually were, and then he left. I was like, that's great. That's a funny line from Lawler. It's the peak of my Lawler enjoyment this week. It takes a dramatic nosedive later on.
Oh, yes. Christ, I just remembered what you're talking about. Anyway, backstage, Shane McMahon walks into the Helmsley McMahon war room and does the what did I do thing like he's McNulty in The Wire.
That's gotta be Shane.
Oh no, I can't have Linda's Thanksgiving dinner and hit Big Show with the elbow.
I'll do both at the same time.
Linda's like, why are we having Thanksgiving dinner on top of the Titantron? Oh, no reason. Be right back. Yay!
Someone at the door. Shane jumps down with a plate full of turkey. Oh, you. Anyway, it doesn't matter because his house is getting raided.
Exactly. And let's move on to happier things. Like Chris Benoit as Intercontinental Champion. Oh, no. And he's challenging against the almost forgotten D'Lo Brown. And D'Lo gets a much bigger pop than Benoit. Just want to point that out. D'Lo hangs with Chris and after landing a calf kick, yells, what's up with that? Second rope moonsault gets two and looks lovely. D'Lo does not have the ugh work rate of Benoit, Japanese style. But he's much, much better at getting the crowd invested in the match with his facials and yelling, something that Benoit wasn't really able to, even when he was world champion. And D'Lo was able to dodge the diving headbutt, but then Benoit beautifully counters the sky high into a crossface to tap out to retain. I very much enjoyed this match. It was a nice surprise. I felt it was very symbolic of the year 2000 guys versus the year 99 Russo guys being eshed away and thinned out and being replaced by guys like Benoit and Jericho, Malenko, etc. What did you think, Tom?
I loved it. This was an excellent match. Benoit and D'Lo just had beautiful chemistry here. They really did. And the finish was, chef, you can't see it because it is a podcast, but I am doing the chef's kiss. The chef's kiss. Because D'Lo going for the sky high and Benoit turning it into the crossface was sublime. And I can't remember entirely if this is how it goes, but I do hope the rest of Benoit's IC title reign is him on the back foot, but then him countering their finish into the crossface. I want that from a million different places. Like, I love a finisher that's that versatile, that can just be popped out anywhere. It's great. So I really, really like this match. And it felt like very much like the old versus the new. You mentioned like how it was one of Russo's guys versus, you know, one of the WCW guys. It did feel like a generational thing. And it was beautiful. It was beautiful. It just makes me sad because D'Lo Brown was so good. Like, Benoit's great. D'Lo ain't no shrinking violet. He's ever so good. And it just feels like he was such a lost prospect. Possibly, I feel like if the world had turned in a different way, obviously the stuff with Draws, I think, put paid to a lot of his momentum and that being as it was. D'Lo was so good. Like, he could have been a guy you could have found. You could have made D'Lo a top guy. I genuinely believe that.
I think because I was listening to a lot of Something to Wrestle With, Bruce told a story that I wasn't familiar with. And I think I brought it up before and I was expecting to see something coming of it in the Observer updates, but it was late 99, allegedly, D'Lo went, F it, I'm going to WCW. I've had enough of this, and was quite loud and boisterous about this. And because Russo was a D'Lo Brown guy, Russo's in WCW, hey, Jeff Jarrett got a big fat contract, why not D'Lo? And apparently, then D'Lo had to look at his contract and go, oh, I've got like another 8 months left. I'm not going anywhere. Oh, and I had to like begrudgingly come in. It must be like that episode of Seinfeld where Constanza quits and then comes into work the next day. He's just like, did you quit? Because what? No. No, I don't even talk about. No. Did I quit? No. You must be thinking of somebody else, you know. And I think I can't help but feel that there was some grudging resentment in some members of management there for someone doing something so what's the word I'm looking for here? So dramatic, so loud, and having to come back with his tail between his legs going, oh, you want to push, do you? Okay.
It's a shame that it went the way it did. I get D'Lo's frustration because D'Lo obviously wanted to do more. But hey, look, this was great. In a bubble, this was a great match.
Certainly. And let's face facts. If D'Lo Brown had gone to WCW in 2000, even though we'd be chatting D'Lo, D'Lo, it would have been the same crap. Oh no, D'Lo Brown with blood splattered all over him. Oh no, D'Lo losing to FUNB Hulk Hogan, losing his real name as Terry Bollea. You know, it's like, who are we kidding? Anyway, never mind that. The WWF Stack of the Week, brought to you by Stacker 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Do you want a fun fact about Stacker 2?
Yeah, please.
Okay, this is about 6 years after this episode of SmackDown, but you know 5-Hour Energy? The 5-Hour Energy drink? I think TNA was sponsored by them for a while. Like, hey, our show is really fast. Drink this, you bastards. So 5-Hour Energy was an energy drink that was around. In 2006, Stacker 2 went, get this, you buggers, buy our new 6-Hour Energy.
Oh.
To which 5-Hour Energy went, no, that's not happening. And it ended up with Stacker 2 losing $22 million in a lawsuit. Because they went, oh, dickheads, 6-Hour. Nah, that's copyright. Come on.
That's amazing. Yeah, you know, I wonder why someone would just do like 5 hours and 20 minutes or something just to shove on as if someone's timing it. Yeah, they must have had that copyrighted. That's amazing.
That's a fun story about Stacker 2. So it's an energy thing. It burns fat quicker than most. And it can make these women cleaning the car on the advert for Stacker 2. Love you.
Yeah, they'll clean their car really quickly and then have heart palpitations the rest of the day.
Come get heart palpitations with us here at the WWF with Stacker 2.
Have you ever tried one of those 5-Hour Energies?
Do you know what? I haven't because I suffer heart palpitations at the best of times. So I haven't had an energy drink since, I think, 2007. And I feel like if I have an energy drink, I might die. So I err on the side of caution and go, I don't like Red Bull enough to risk the edge of my life, you know. So I try and sort of control my coffee intake and I don't touch energy drinks because I feel like it might make my heart burst out of my chest.
That's a very sensible thing, Tom. I was heavily addicted to these things.
Oh,
turns
really?
Out caffeine is monstrously addictive. Not 5-Hour Energy, but like it was just the culture when I was at uni. Those 609, and you know, and I would feel miserable the first half of the day until I would have one of those things. And it was the full sugar ones because the sugar free ones were crap back then. I'd get one of them, and it would almost be, you know, the sensation I could almost be like, obviously not, I'm saying comparable to, you know, being addicted to like a drug because I'm like, oh god, I have to, I've been up at 7. Because I'd always say I have to have one like at midday because getting up and having one was bad. But being miserable and having a headache the first half of the day and then having one at midday was like, that was completely normal, Tom. This is normal adult behavior. I am a good student. And I'm so glad that I'm not like that anymore. It was a bitch getting off them.
So what was the decision that made you, what was it that made you go, that's it, I can't drink these anymore?
I forget the exact moment. There wasn't like a penny dropping. I was at that point. I was drinking them. No, I know what it would be. I was drinking them out of boredom almost, and I just went, right, I have to stop this. Because when I would go to bed, even if I had one like midday, and I go to bed at like 12 hours later, I'd be lying there, the body is still not moving, trying to get to sleep. And meanwhile, my heart is doing the Guinness shark advert. Bom, 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 bom. I'm like, somebody tells me that that isn't particularly healthy. So, but on a funny note, this is like sounding like really sad. The funny note was one time at Magfest, I think it was the first or second time I went, 5 Hour Energy sent some blokey and they're like, hey, can we sell these? And they went, no, you can't just sell them at the doing a random bit of the hotel. You have to like apply for the vendor license and everything. That was months ago. Oh, okay, well, we've got the stuff now. Sod it, we'll just give them away. And that was a bad thing to do with a hotel filled with nerds, because nerds went, after years of playing Fallout and all these other games, 5 Hour Energy. So if I take 5 5-Hour Energies, that's 25 hours of energy. Great, I can go for a solid day. And then they would drink 5 5-Hour Energies and then not eat or drink anything. I then needed to go see a medic. And at that point, 5 Hour Energy apparently tried to go next year. And Magfest went, no, there's nothing necessarily wrong with your product, but the audience does not cater for it. All these people be like, too busy having fun, no time to drink or eat. So kids, if you listen to this and if you say, that's not how they work at all, for the love of God, do not do this.
No, there you go.
Anyway, I think we've got another rather serious track, so let's move on to, oh yeah, the stack of the week. Tyrion Cat do something. That was the stack of the week. Apparently, according to the next bit, Terry and Kat have been having loads of issues. And with that one clip of them doing one thing, who are we to doubt WWF?
Well, it's the longest running feud in the company right now.
It must be.
It goes all the way back to WrestleMania.
Oh, yeah, sure. Is that what they're referring to? I mean, I guess, but there's been no mention of it on SmackDown. So it's
just
like,
slow
oh my
burner,
God.
Isn't it? They just, you know, just sprinkle a bit in here. Sprinkle a bit in there. I just kept it on the old DL.
A slow burner, like my heart 10 years ago.
On Stacker 2.
Stacker 2. Stacker harder. So they're finally having the match we've all been looking forward to, an arm wrestling contest presented by, and I've typed this here, U-Tree Lawler. And that may seem a bit harsh at first, but wait.
Normally, I would edit out quite a few bits of Jerry Lawler-based content from these podcasts, but this week, it is utterly deserved. I've written here, arm wrestling contest overseen by massive lech and colossal sex pest, Jerry Lawler.
Why makes you say that?
He is so unpleasant here, and I feel embarrassed to watch this as a wrestling fan, because the crowd's reaction does not suit the sheer horror that is occurring in the ring.
Yes, if you've seen any arm wrestling contest in wrestling in the last, 40 years, yes, this is it. There's a formula and it's successful, especially when Jerry Lawler is there to perv like that wolf in that film that Jim Carrey in the Mask is watching, where his eyes become hearts and his heart is becoming an erection and all the other stuff that's happening in this walking metaphor for horniness that is Jerry Lawler. Because the Cat and Terry are dressed for this arm wrestling contest the same way that they dress up for them in the Olympics, very tastefully dressed. And he's just nonstop innuendoing as they get ready to do the thing. They lock up. Oh, no, wait, not ready. Lock up again. Oh, not ready. Terry eventually spits water into Kate. Bloody hell. No, that's a silent E. Kat's eyes to win. So Kat nails the safest Bronco Buster in history's revenge. Jerry Lawler then sinks in the other corner and demands one from her too. Make my face the happiest place on earth, says Lawler. The crowd cheers. The Cat leaves.
what a pervert, says Cole. And I have typed here, PTC did nothing wrong. Any particular highlights from the Book of Lawler here, Tom?
Wow, this was... It's just... It's just unpleasant. It's just unpleasant. It's Lawler just constantly ogling and in one case, groping the contestants. And yeah. The crowd just eating it up.
Yeah,
and Michael Cole going, oh, Jerry Lawler. Oh.
Hiding in plain sight, they call it.
Hiding in plain sight as a pervert. Oh, God. It is I just felt my skin crawling watching this. And I know there will be people listening to this going, ugh, flipping, simping virtue signaler. No, shut up, right? Here's the thing. 20 years ago, this was the thing. And it's terrible that this was the thing 20 years ago. It's unforgivable that this was the thing 20 years ago. Terry coming out and all Lawler saying is, bring on the puppies. I'm thinking, oh, God, this is really where we were. This is horrible. People would go, oh, it was fine then. Yeah, it was. But we used to have cigarette adverts during cartoons. Doesn't make it all right now. I found the whole thing awful. And it's embarrassing that this lives in the time capsule.
I mean, you're right, Tom. In many ways, I'm going to be positive and look at, instead of going, ooh, misses, because who am I kidding? I was a horny little kid back then. I probably loved this segment as much as Lawler did. But now we can look at where we are with women's wrestling, the presentation of women in WWE, and go, get in. You know, look at how far we've come. And I think that is a victory. PTC did nothing wrong.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Undertaker and his enormous duster are walking backstage. If I don't know better, the people who own the arena are probably asking him if he can go through all the halls and save the cleaners the job. But more importantly, Road Dogg and X-Pac are in the ring doing their mic bit at the start. And finally, Tommy, are you ready for this? Road Dogg finally heals it up. Someone smartened him up. You're the baddies. Stop doing the New Age Outlaws thing and getting cheered. And he does a bit of it and then stops and mixes it up and insults the crowd and goes, hey, we're going to bury the Undertaker tonight. And that's it. And the crowd are like booing him because they're going to bury the Undertaker and that sucks for him because it'll ruin that duster. And also booing him because it's like, oh, you're not the New Age Outlaws, are you? You finally realise you're actually a bad un. Boo. And the only thing more hated than that is the horrible overdubbed entrance and also the blurred out Kid Rock advert for Undertaker. And God, does it take away from the sight and sound of seeing Undertaker with all this crap. I'm very sorry for all the people watching this only on the network for the first time. God, it was cool seeing him coming out to an American badass, watch me, radio edit and all the rest.
We're just gonna have to bite this, aren't we, and just get used to this.
Yeah. But I just want to reassure people, when he came back, he was cool. Like Lawler, he was cool. He's aged well. X-Pac gets yeeted straight away while Undertaker is still in the big duster. Nice, crazy that X-Pac still taking those bumps when it goes way over the top rope and basically it's a tope con hello to absolutely nobody. Undertaker sells for 2 seconds and then goes to take it apart both men like he's Steven Seagal in Hard to Kill. DX try to leave, but the duds show up to scare him. So the Stacker's 2 size chokeslam makes Undertaker the number one contender very easily. D-Von Dudley comes into the ring to celebrate with Undertaker, but then Undertaker chokeslams him too. The Ginger Ninja strikes again.
I'm beginning to believe what Matt McMuscles was saying last week about how Undertaker is here as a de facto Steve Austin. In the absence of that sort of rebellious, don't trust anybody, blue-collar Texan nightmare, we've got Undertaker doing that same thing. So, like, Bubba Ray getting in there as a babyface, getting chokeslammed. He's like, oh, here we go. Undertaker has no allegiance other than to himself becoming the WWE champion.
Yeah, they need that dude who's like, I'm not going to take it from this evil regime. They've done it now. And yeah, even if it doesn't make any sense for like D-Von Dudley's like, hey, I helped you, chokeslam. It's like, Steve Austin would have done that. And you're like, okay. Fair enough. Crowd cheers for it, but whatever. We can't be dwelling on this. Not when we have more important things to do, like Hardcore Holly showing up to a big pop because he's spending his time dunking people with chairs on Raw. His opponent tonight is Chris Jericho, thankfully not wearing that awful shirt from last week with just a picture of his face going, ah. But the Y2J Chrome Light one isn't too amazing either. Not on a good run here with shirts. Jericho says they don't need to be dunking chairs on one another. They can sit down and drink like men. Jericho can bring some cognac for him and some Rogaine for Hardcore Holly. And the crowd, that wasn't a great joke, but crowd's, I got him! Reaction made that so much better than it was. Ah, your hair's going!
Like, it's funny because you're going bald.
Yeah. Jericho calls Holly a goofy jackass, then runs into the ring and bonks himself on the top rope almost instantly in an attempted Irish whip. Hardcore Holly makes sure he's okay by immediately stomping him and delivering the best drop kick in all of wrestling. After that, it gets a bit sloppy and starts to die a slow, slow death. So naturally, Chris Benoit shows up, and after a distraction, Jericho ends it with a lion salt, and the production can't cut away from this match quick enough. Oof. What did you think of this lovely mess, Tom?
It was a hot mess. The big note that I made in this was, it wasn't lost on me that Chris Jericho, in the year of our Lord 2000, suggested sitting down for a distinguished meeting with a heel. Something that he would do to great effect 20 years later.
Oh, I see. Right, that took a few seconds.
As soon as he was there going, maybe we should sit down, maybe have a few drinks, I'll get some cognac. I was like, oh my God, he's calling Le Dinner Debonair 20 years early, but with Hardcore Holly, which would have been crap. Let's all take a moment. John.
Oh, poor John.
John. J-A-A-W-W-W-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N- Kane burning some cakes. No, I'm kidding. That's not what I want. I want... Go, that's gotta be Kane. Holly and Jericho doing La Dinner Debonair. That would make my day. Thank you kindly.
Yeah, make sure you have the cognac and Rogaine there for them to be drinking.
Yes, please do. Please do. Yeah, this was a bit of a hot mess of a match, wasn't it? This was Jericho would be very hit and miss in his early days in WWF. Which is a shame, because as a performer, he's great. There was a lack of consistency, and it was depending on who he was in there with sometimes and the mood he was in. Like, there would just be such wild inconsistency with him.
There would be, and this was also something
a certain Power Slam writer would love bringing up every single month where there wasn't anything to talk about. I forget his name, so let's carry on. But yeah, usually these two guys bring the goods. Instead, they brought the bads.
I thought that was a good line.
All right, no. Kane, stop writing scripts. No.
You may be good, but I am bad. Oh, no, I've got it wrong.
That's got to be Kane.
I am the opposite to the thing that you are.
You may be
good, but I'm Kane.
That should have been a shirt.
Rock, you smell what the Rock is cooking. I just smell.
Do you smell Kane?
That smell you smell is Kane.
That's the bottom Kane.
Wait, where are you going? I have other t-shirt ideas.
I have lots of other t-shirts. Kane 16?
I didn't get the biblical thing. Oh, is that what that was? I thought it was just a number.
It's Kane. It's damn Kane.
I like the number 16. What's wrong with 16?
It looks a bit like 19. Oh, no, me, 19!
Oh, no, the pain, the pain. Pain, that rhymes with Kane. Write that down.
Who's he saying write that down to?
He just thinks there's someone there.
Why can't I do a Jerry Lawler bit where I perv on the women? Is it my face? Is it my deep throat? Why did you laugh when I said deep throat?
Woohoo! Puppies! Hey, Terry! Show us your breasts!
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, was I meant to be subtle?
Yeah, I that's just what Lawler's doing.
Lawler can do it, why can't I?
Hey, you're so hot, I want to burn you with my eternal burning flames of the parents that Paul Bearer either had sex with or killed. Why are you frowning?
Come back!
This is just a popularity contest.
We've got this booth for an hour, come back!
I'll give you a free t-shirt. It says, I am the Kane.
Time to Kane the game. We could have put a different word in there.
Look, I'll give you this.
Congratulations to Kane, who has now become Test on the Cult Online Classic SmackDown review.
I wanted to be Lawler, but I'm Test. That's just gotta be Kane.
And never mind that, the next thing is the WF Rewind brought to you by the Laredo Tobacco Company's Youth Smoking Prevention Program.
This just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? If there was ever any indicator that the WWF at this point just took money from whoever, just had no allegiance to any flag, was just like, yep, lugs, ka-ching, RC Cola, ka-ching, stack of palpitation drink, cha-ching, what's this, the anti-tobacco, yeah, whatever, can't be bothered to read the title, cha-ching. I do remember in the WWF magazine, they had print adverts from the Lollyard Tobacco Company's Youth Smoking Prevention Program, or as we could now call it, the Lutukyusup. If you remember the Lutukyusup's adverts that say tobacco is wacko if you're a teen.
I do remember them, yeah.
Which is like, so it had like just pictures, like very strong images of like kids in their rooms and stuff, which was cigarette smoke would have burnt something they love. And the phrase, tobacco is wacko if you're a teen, which always suggested to me, so when you get older, it's fine. Like, tobacco is wacko if you're a teen. If you're an adult, crack on.
Yeah. It's a bit odd. You are right.
If you're an adult, smoke Marlboro. Like, that should be the next part of the advert. Tobacco is wacko if you're a teen. What's that? You're in your 30s? Here, have a pack of Cuban cigarettes.
Yeah, you need to be an adult to make a horrible decision. Because, Tom, if you're dead from the horrible effects of smoking, you're not going to be able to buy Stacker 2.
Exactly.
And then what will WF do?
They want to get you addicted to smoking and then addicted to Stacker 2.
No. Off the smoking. Off that. This is what the...
Off the fags. The
tobacco company program. Once you... saving all that money from smoking. Smoking is very bad for your health. Stacker 2 is tremendous for your heart.
It'll pop out like Homer's brain and go, ah, screw this. You can stay, but I'm leaving. In fact, your heart will be so powerful it becomes sentient, start paying tax, and it'll be able to buy its own cigarettes. From Stacker 2. Joe C. lands a hockey stick into Christian's balls, costing them the tag titles, and he dances them afterwards, as per the contract in Kid Rock's deal with Undertaker's theme music. I'm joking,
it's a very
by the way.
I think this contract they've got. One of our team was hit somebody in the nadgers.
Yeah, I mean, Kid Rock was very mainstream successful at this point, and it's one of these things where I look back on and go, wow, those were a thing of the moment, wasn't it? Joe C and Kid Rock. But then you realise this is how insanely popular WF was at the time. Kid Rock was huge. Kid Rock's at platinum at this point. He went platinum selling rhymes, went platinum seven times. And you can't see that nowadays. Who are they going to get as a music act to show up and do a run and it not be a bloody, really camp, cringe thing like the bloke from the Today Show and all the other crap ones they've done here? This was Joe C hit him in the dick and they cost him the titles. It, you know, Billy Piper wasn't running into the FWA to help the Dirt Bike Kid.
If she had, I think British wrestling would be in a far better place.
Yeah, and then the 24/7 title, she'll defend it all of the day, all of the night.
Oh, could you imagine flipping Chris Evans pinning Billy Piper in the middle of the night? He did many times.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, he did, Tom. You don't need to imagine it.
Chris Evans as hardcore. John!
Oh, no, no, God, please.
Billy
no.
Piper as hardcore champion. Not being pinned by Chris Evans, though. That
yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, okay, yeah.
Oh, by the way, when we say Chris Evans, we need to say, when we say Chris Evans, we don't mean Captain America.
Right. It took me years to get used to that.
I still struggle. When we say Chris Evans, we mean the British television and radio presenter, Chris Evans, the ginger one with the glasses. Doesn't wear glasses anymore, though. We mean him. We don't mean Chris Evans, Captain America.
Yeah. He can hit Billy with a toothbrush. The Rock is backstage with Kevin Kelly. I've just put matters. The Rock smell. Yeah, it's just formulaic rock. It's great, but it's just missing something where it's not out in the ring with the crowd going crazy.
Well, maybe we can ask Kevin Kelly about that next week.
Oh, why is that?
Because he's on Desert Island Graps.
Really?
Yeah, the Kevin Kelly.
Where can we find that?
Oh, on this here podcast feed next week. Bombshell. Boom.
Yeah, but the only reason he's here is like Tom said, are you working for any Japanese company? He went, no. And he went, oh, that's all right. Doesn't even make any sense. It's new Japanese works. That's
I'm
horrible.
Tell him the joke and see if he gets it.
Tell him the joke. It's like, shove it in somehow and see if he gets it.
I'd like to think I'll say it and he'll laugh so hard and he'll say, do you want to be best friends? And I'll go, yes, Kevin Kelly. I want us to be best friends.
Maybe just like overly explain it like Skinner. Go, oh, I see. No, the pro wrestling company, but also sounds like you're saying no, as in no. That's good, that.
Johnny and the Clonosaurus. Yeah, so there you go. Good standard Rock bit of interview action here. Yeah. I'm excited to see Rock mixing it up with Edge and Christian.
Oh, well, special. I'm glad you're excited for it because he takes them on after this.
Oh.
The Rock, of course, annihilates both of them. While the crowd is molten lava, like the lava scene in the new hit film The Mummy Returns, starring The Rock, until Christian hits his trademark flying crossbody to the outside. Edge misses a spear and takes out the ref, so Edge tries to a ring bell shot. Is that what I've typed that? That is awful diction, Matthew. Why have you typed that? Edge tries to hit The Rock with the ring bell, that's much better, on The Rock, but misses that as well and lands it on Christian instead. Jesus, Edge is horrible. So Shane hits the flying Shane McMahon chair shot from across the ring, and that's got to be it. But it ain't it. The cock... Oh, Christ. What? The Rock kicks out...
The who?
Oh,
no. The who, sorry?
Oh, no.
What did you...
The Rock kicks out.
What did you just call future president of America, Dwayne The Rock Johnson?
Dwayne. The Rock kicks out like how he kicked out Brendan Fraser from The Mummy's Pyramid in the new hit film The Mummy Returns.
Mate, WWF would be livid about the fact that we didn't do commentary for this. They should have had us on the books at this point.
The Rock recovers and makes a comeback as the camera is literally shaking
from the crowd reaction to the excitement of the idea of queuing up to buy tickets to this new film. Rock Bottom, People's Elbow, 1, 2, 3. Yeah, The Rock is doing The Rock things, Edge and Christian, but the excitement with Shane McMahon teasing it and awkwardly, and Edge missing everything because apparently he's an idiot. Crowd ate up with a huge spoon. Again, if you go back and look at this on the network, if you see nothing else, I'm not joking when I'm saying literally shaking from the crowd just going crazy for The Rock in the ending sequence there.
They just ate this up, didn't they? They really did.
They did. Backstage, Shane McMahon blames the referee and Vince says, "That's gotta be Shane." That'd be a lot funnier if you hadn't done it earlier. But never mind the McMahon bollocks. Here's Crash Holly. Subway presents King of the Ring 2000. Okay. I can't think of any jokes to do with Subway and small individuals like Crash Holly, so we'll move on. And he's taking on Albert in a qualifying match. Lola points out this is not a mismatch. Crash weighs 400 pounds and Albert only weighs 350. Thank you, Lola, for saving that. Crash shrugs off a giant swing to land an acid drop DDT on Albert. It gets two, but Crash is able to fall out of a powerbomb to get a sunset flip and win with the two count? Or was it a three? They use a very interesting camera angle here. I don't know what happened, but the giant pop is not there, so presumably the crowd didn't think much of it either. Trish then shoves Crash Holly into the ring post on the outside in a bit that looked a bit better on paper than it did in reality. And then they dared to show a replay of the bad referee count. I don't know what was up with the production on this episode of SmackDown, but it was a bit below par. But it doesn't matter because Albert lands that spinning neck knacker to get some heat back and everyone moves on. What do you think of the finish here, Tom?
I didn't mind the finish. I thought it got Crash Holly over a big lad like Prince Albert. I was all right with the way it went down. I like Crash Holly being in the King of the Ring. I like he's the underdog, smaller guy in there, and he's already overcome a mountain of a man to get us underway. So I'm all right with it, honestly. I don't think this wasn't the nicest of matches, but I thought it was fine. I thought it did the job.
Yeah, I thought the match was good. It's just the finish. The crowd loves Crash Holly at this moment, by the way, I should point out. But you know, 1, 2, 2.5, ring the bell, whatever. The crowd's like, oh. Anyway, Triple H yells at Vince McMahon and Shane for messing up stuff. So he's going to fix things because he's the game. Steph, what game is he?
He's Wetrix, mate. Now, Steph, they've not done any jokes about me this week. Yeah, I've been getting all the jokes this week. That's got to be Kane. I'm the new kid on the block.
Steph, I'm such a loser that the meme created by this podcast, I'm no longer the main character of. I feel like Metal Gear Solid 2. People wanted to see Test, but they got this loser, Kane, instead. That's a game.
I feel like the people that made Dinosaur Planet, and it was going all right until they decided to shoehorn Fox McCloud in.
Good God, that's a deep cut there from Tom. I can't top that.
That is a deep cut. Steph, I feel like the people that made Sonic 06 in the sense that it was going all right until they wanted cross-platform with Xbox, so we had to reprogram loads of it, and it took so long we didn't have time to do anything for the other versions, so everyone thinks it's shit.
Steph goes, why is X-Pac a console? I don't understand.
Oh yeah, it's not been invented yet, has it? Oh, wait, or has it? No, it hasn't.
Let me check the manual for this stupid podcast.
Let me check. Microsoft doing a console? What do you mean, like that Mega Drive PC they released back in the day? Do you remember that?
PC? Oh, vaguely.
There was a Mega Drive PC.
It could emulate Mega Drive stuff.
Well, if I remember correctly, it had a cartridge slot.
Right. So it was... Yeah, it was not emulating.
It was a Mega Drive, but with inside a cartridge.
That's good because PCs were portable back then.
They were very portable, as long as you had three friends to carry it and a Land Crusher, Land Rover to get it from one place to another.
That's right. and a kid with one of those setups you see in films where he's cycling and the wire's connected up to the power and he has to, oh, whatever, shut up, Matthew. We get a recap of the giant King of the Ring field. It's just absolutely going nowhere. Rikishi beat Shane McMahon on Raw, but then Triple H beat him up afterwards. Bull Buchanan beat Steve Blackman to really let you know that head cheese is dead. Deader than dead. Wait, I think we're talking about this on the podcast. Actually, mind me, on the other podcast on Cultaholic, I said head cheese. And I think Pacitti was like, oh, that's just knob juice. And I went, no, head cheese is like the stuff you get from a butcher's. It's like, it's really heady meat. And I went, no, head cheese is supposed to, it's you know, innuendo. And I went, I never got that.
Did you not?
Because they had the cheese heads, actual heads of cheese, very literally.
Oh, mate. No.
I've never heard that discharge be referred to as head cheese before. That sounds far too pleasant a name.
I heard about it when I was in high school.
Oh, no.
Because it told me. It must have been a kid at school or somebody who said that they'd had problems in that area and they had to have if you're a bit squeamish, you might want to just skip ahead about a minute. They had to get like a little device, like an umbrella, pushed into their lad, and then it opened slightly, and it brought all of the head cheese out.
Oh my god!
I think it's otherwise known as smegma.
Yeah, that's what I've called it. Smegma's a disgusting term. Smegma. It just sounds.
The head
bad.
Cheese is better.
No, because I associate with Al Snow and Steve Blackman, and I don't want to. I don't know what I'd be more comfortable with. Cottage
please,
cheese pouring out. Oh, bloody.
Knob discharge.
Mick Foley's mate and the guy who's kind of like Ken Shamrock. Me knob.
What?
Let's move on really quickly, Tom.
Knob discharge being discussed on the podcast.
Yeah, moving swiftly on. Kurt Angle beat Bradshaw. Crash beat Albert. And on Sunday Night Heat, Al Snow will take on Val Venus. And China takes on The Godfather. Ah, it's interesting seeing them plug Sunday Night Heat for these qualifiers. It's the first time we've heard that bastard stepson mentioned in quite some time.
It's been a while.
It has been. Speaking of bastard things. RC Edge Maximum Power Cola presents The Undertaker. No selling everything. RC Edge Maximum Taker Power Cola. Taker, no BS. Grrr, vroom, vroom. Kane shows up for the main event and tells the referee to leave the match. Against Triple H because there's now a guest referee. And Linda McMahon
I've come to support my husband. That's gotta be Kane.
No. It's better than a robot. It's Earl freaking Hebner, who has the SmackDown theme as his entrance music. Big pop there. And again, the continuity from Earl Hebner being the referee that Triple H hates and the other way around, going back several months now. Kane chokes Triple H to begin and proceeds to big red machine all over him. I did miss when Kane would just beat the hell out of people. Triple H makes a comeback and torpedoes Kane at the ring steps. Kind of like how he catapulted him. In the same way the Mummy Returns will catapult right to number one in the UK box office. And in a cool bit, Triple H powers out the chokeslam attempt by punching Kane a ton of times. And when he feels like Kane may actually go down, not quite down on a knee, but he's staggering. He runs off the ropes right into a clothesline from Kane's bedroom. Triple H goes for a chair. Earl tries to stop him, but in the confusion, Kane chokes on Triple H to get the win just like that. Hey, that means we've got three number one contenders.
Oh, no. What a dilemma.
We've literally got a plot line from the Kane-Linda show we talked about last week, as we now have a situation flimsier than a Lucha Underground contract. Three number one contenders heading to King of the Ring. What are we going to do?
Not a bad main event, though. Like, big beefy boys in the main event. And Kane getting a win over Triple H. Triple H was very giving with pins at this time of his career, wasn't he?
He certainly was. And I noticed, though, in the right setting.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't a normal referee. It wasn't under normal conditions. It was with that pesky, biased official, Earl Hebner. So Triple H is still both losing to Kane and making him look good, but also keeping a bit of his luster. Very smart. No wonder he was the cerebral assassin for so long.
Mm.
And that's all I have to say. That is the episode. That is it. And this is the part of the episode where we reflect back, not on our lives, but on the episode of SmackDown, and go, Tom, what was something you remembered from this episode of SmackDown?
I remembered from this particular episode, this is the random thing I remember. I remember Kane saying, Earl Hebner. Because it was so weird. Like, Kane very rarely spoke, and then all of a sudden, he's a chatterbox, and we can't shut him up. I feel like it would have... I don't know where Paul Bearer was at this point. I know that he'd taken some time away from the company just after WrestleMania, but I wasn't sure whether he was still involved with the company at this point. I'll have an answer for you for next week's show as to the whereabouts of Paul Bearer. But I always thought that's where Paul was great as a mouthpiece for Kane. I feel like he could have carried this better. But Kane saying, Earl Hebner, was just funny because it brings up the idea that Kane has negotiated for Earl Hebner to be a referee. And it's putting Kane in those human situations that is never not funny. It's never not funny.
Yeah.
So about you, sir, what did you remember from this episode?
Yeah, Kane suddenly going for the title. I remember that and thought, oh, I like this. Because as great as the Triple H Rock thing has been, it was over. They need to do something different. But again, they can't just rush Undertaker going straight for it and hotshotting that. Something that they'll probably do today. So having Kane come in and make it a bit messy and give it that mystique and interest, so I have to watch SmackDown every week. Very good idea. Always liked Kane. Always liked him when he was used well. When I saw Kane do his line and thinking, oh, that's not what Kane is to me, you know. He should have just pointed at the belt slowly and then pointed at himself and then nodded. And the crowd would have understood it. But instead it's like, alas, poor Yorick, I knew him well. And saying, oh, Christ. But I remember him going for the title and him winning and thinking, get in. I'd love to see Kane as champion. What a nice man. But what was something that you forgot?
I forgot about the belter that D'Lo Brown and Chris Benoit had. Oh, my God, that was a good one. Just a strong match from those guys. Loved it.
You know what? I may have to pick that as well.
Hey, look at that. We're joined. Same match.
We
That's
are.
Great.
We're I like together it. Like head cheese in your meat.
Great match. If you watch one match from this show, I'd recommend watching D'Lo Brown versus Chris Benoit. It is a sleeper of a match. It really, really is.
And also, please let us know if you do go back and watch any of these bits we talk about, or you just put this on, shut your eyes and visualize it.
Shut your eyes and masturbate.
Christ! Oh, I love it when they do crap impressions. My favourite.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Steph!
Oh, take a Tana. No, more obscure.
What's the hidden word for people who get to the end of the podcast?
Smegma.
Tweet us smegma.
Oh, no, you know what? I don't want that. I sometimes read my Twitter when I'm eating. No, don't tweet that. God, what a horrible idea.
All right, okay. Okay, in that case, if you read your Twitter while you're eating, right, the secret message is... Maff, have a lovely dinner.
Oh, you know what? I love that one.
There you go. If you get to the end of this podcast, you have to message Maff and say, have a lovely dinner.
I will definitely forget it and see all these people going, wait, is my webcam on?
Yeah.
Oh no, what have they seen?
And snorted then. That's exciting. And you can do that by tweeting at Matthew Gregg on Twitter. I am at Tom Campbell on Twitter. He is at Matthew Gregg on Twitter. Together, we are at Cultaholic on Twitter. Don't forget to join us. Smegma. I love you. Bye.
I could play Bomberman for the Smega Drive.
Smega Drive!
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.